and Sean Duke, the cool scientist as well. God, we're spoiled today. You're very welcome, Sean. Thanks for coming in. Pioneering surgery at Dublin Hospital saves lives of 128 twins. I saw that during the week.
Yeah, this is great. This is Fergal Malone. He's the consultant that was doing this at the Rotunda. And it's for identical twins. And they reckon since 2006, they've saved about 100 children this way. And essentially what happens with some identical twins, well, quite a lot actually, is there's something called twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome, which essentially is with the mother's placenta, which gives the twins their blood supply. One of the twins is getting a lot of blood supply, if you like, a lot of oxygen, and the other one isn't getting enough. Surprisingly common in identical twins. It affects about 20% of them, so one in five pairs. So this is seen quite a lot in the hospital. So this new technique was brought into Ireland by Fergal Malone in the Rotunda. It was used in other places around the world, but he's the one doing it in Ireland. And the it was a pretty bad prognosis if you actually had this, because for the twins affected, 90% of them would have some kind of severe abnormality, even if they managed to survive. So it wasn't good, but. With this technique, and essentially what they do is they send a tiny camera in, it looks around and it checks out the blood vessels, and then when they identify the abnormal blood vessels, they use surgery, precision laser surgery, to sort it out, to rearrange the blood flow. And this has led to babies surviving in 47% of pregnancies, and at least one of the twins surviving in 75% of pregnancies.
Right, so it's a huge improvement.
It's a huge improvement, yeah. And so for identical twins, if you think there's an issue there, one of the twins maybe isn't getting the right amount of oxygen, then Rotunda seems the place to go.
Right, well, well done to Rotunda.
Yeah.
Nobel Prize for Medicine to a particular man. I saw his picture during the week. Who's this man? William C. Campbell.
William C. Campbell, yeah. He's from Remelton in County Donegal. I actually got married there. And one of my parents stayed in a B&B and they were related to this guy, so I knew his story. But it was a bit of a surprise to see him win the Nobel Prize at the same time. He's a Donegal man, and he grew up there, and then he went to Trinity College where he did his science degree, and then he was very good. He got offered a PhD in Wisconsin in the US. So in his early 20s he went off to the US and he stayed there ever since. Now what he works on, it doesn't sound that important, but it is very important, because essentially himself and this other guy, Satoshi Amura. So the two of them got the prize, or half the prize, so he actually ended up with a quarter of the prize. But nevertheless, the prize money, I worked it out, there's 8 million krona for the full prize, but if you get a quarter prize, quarter share of the prize, he still comes out with about €200,000 or thereabouts. So it's still
hell, fair play to him. Yeah. But I mean, he's changing a lot of lives.
He sure is. So it's against these parasites, roundworm parasites. Now, in the developed world, Ireland and the rest of the developed world, we don't tend to get as many of these roundworm parasites because we're obsessed with cleanliness and, you know, keeping children clean and they're not eating dirt off the ground and stuff like that. But these things can cause serious illnesses. Among them, let's see now, we have various ones in sub-Sahara Africa, for example. You have one third, and other places around the world, they reckon that one third of the world's population has suffered from these parasitic worms. That's an awful lot of people. You're in the billions. So you have something called river blindness that causes a problem for your eyes, inflammation in the cornea, loss of vision. That's one issue. Then there's another thing which is really awful. It's called lymphatic filariasis. And this essentially is elephantiasis, so the elephant man, if you like, if anyone saw that film. So actually about 100 million people around the world suffer from that, and that's a horrific disease. So what they did was, the two of them, they identified bacteria that seemed to have anti-parasite properties. And then what Campbell did, our Irishman, he found the very particular thing in the bacteria that was going to target the parasites. So this was a bioactive agent, scientists call it. They purified it and they made it into a drug. And the drug is ivermectin. And this has saved literally hundreds of millions of lives around the world. So that's what he did. He's saving hundreds of millions of lives, mainly in the developing world. And to such an extent that a lot of these diseases caused by these roundworm parasites, they're nearly eradicated now as a result of this drug that's been produced from their work. So that's what he did.
William Chicago, 200 grand for a fair play to him.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not just the money, it's all those situations that he's helped.
And apparently in Remelton, the lady who runs the B&B who's related to him, I heard that her phone has been hopping with people ringing from all over the world trying to find out about William Campbell. So there you go.
All right, it is the Cool Scientist. Sean Duke is here. We are talking science as we normally do at this time every Thursday. And Sean is going to tell us in just a second why weight loss was easier in the 1980s than it is now. And maybe this will tie into that survey about how healthy we are in Ireland. Anyway, Sean will continue in just a second. Sean Duke, the Cool Scientist. Sean, can it be true weight loss was easier in the 1980s? Was there less of a temptation to, or what?
Isn't it kind of reassuring for people who remember the 80s being in school and thinking our college and thinking, oh, it was much thinner then, it was much easier then. This is fascinating, I think, because we often say that Irish people were thinner back in the 80s, and I think we were. But the assumption was that we're simply, you know, we're a bit more greedy now, we're eating more, we're exercising less, and that's the end of the story. But actually, scientists have found that there's a little bit more to it than that, and there are many reasons why it's harder to lose weight today than it was a generation ago. What they found that people today, they have to eat less. This is fascinating. You have to eat less and exercise more to avoid obesity now than our parents did, say, a generation ago at the same age. So if you do the same amount of exercise, you eat the same number of calories, people in 2006 had a 2.3 point BMI higher point on average than people in 1988. That's quite a lot, 2.3, if you know your BMIs.
So we're basically bigger.
Yeah, it's harder for us to stay at the right weight. So the question, of course, is why? This was done by York University in Toronto in Canada. Well, there are other factors that have been kind of underestimated. And the other factors people believe, or the scientists believe, that are exerting an influence are things, genetics. Well, our genetics have stayed the same, but there's definitely evidence that genetics is part of some people struggling with weight. But the time we eat at. So this is critical because our lives are busier now than they were a generation ago, and we tend to eat later. We're coming in later. We're working longer hours. So we're sitting down maybe at 8, 9 o'clock. I know in our house we do this a bit, and that is not good. You know, you need to be eating earlier, and we did that in the past. Our levels of stress, that's another thing that influences weight. We're living very stressful lives, you know, even with parents and the amount of places that you have to bring your kids. I don't think it was like that back in the 80s. So we're living busier lives, we're eating at the wrong times, and that is one of the factors certainly why we have a crisis with overweight in Ireland. It's now pushing up towards 60%, and a lot of those people, they go into the pre-diabetes category, and then it's almost inevitable then you go on to diabetes. So this is research that was published in a reputable scientific journal, and it kind of fits in with a few other interesting things about obesity, that it's not just all about how much you eat and how much you exercise. For instance, researchers in UCD recently, there was a report I did on it actually, where they found that actually some people are overweight, it seems, because they don't feel full. You know, some people, they have their dinner and they're grand until bedtime. Other people, about an hour later, or even less, thinking, I'm hungry again. And what's this about? Well, actually, in UCD, and this was published in the New England Journal, which is a big time publication in the States, they're lacking a hormone. And there's a hormone that many of us have that is responsible for us feeling full. Okay, so when that hormone is working, then we're lucky because we don't feel full. We do feel full. if you're lacking that hormone, you're constantly going around hungry. So now they're developing a treatment. They hope to develop it into a drug at UCD where they'll take this and they'll give it to you in a pill or whatever so that you'll have a normal appetite rather than being ravenous the whole time.
Get it checked out.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, briefly this morning, there's a new movie out called The Martian. Does it stand up to the science?
Yeah, it's a great film. Does it stand up to the science? Well, yeah, not too bad now. But if you just go through a few, there's one thing that definitely doesn't stand up, and it's these Martian winds, right? These storms that are in the film. So, you know, 100 mile per hour wind on Mars would be quite rare because, you know, the thin atmosphere, but it could happen. But the thing about it is, if you had that 100 mile an hour wind on Mars like they have in the film, then because of the atmosphere, which is only about 1% as thick as the Earth, very thin, it'd only feel like a 10 mile an hour wind here. So, because of gravity. So that was out the window. The spacecraft, well, scientists say, look, the first craft that goes to Mars is not going to be this massive, big, elaborate, expensive craft, because the money is not going to be there to do it. Going to Mars is going to be on something of a budget. Even NASA in the States doesn't have the budget that it used to have. So it's going to be a small, tighter craft than the one depict this massive thing depicted in Mars. So it'd be kind of like, you know, you're not going to send an ocean liner as the first ship to discover America. That'll come later. So that's kind of wrong. People would have seen the rotation of the ship in the film, and that's actually accurate, because what they try and do is they try and create a gravity that's in between Earth and Mars so that you're in the middle, so that if you're travelling between the two, okay, you have to adjust, but that the craft spins at a gravity that's somewhere in the middle, so that's fine. What else? I could talk about other things. Oh yeah, maybe one other one. The people, when they got there, the astronauts, when they got there, they looked like they were struggling on the ladders to get up the ladder.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, if you were, say, 150 pounds, right, and your suit was 150 pounds, so 300 pound weight that you're carrying, because of the atmosphere, it's only one third of the gravity, so it'd only feel like 100 pounds. So you'd be lighter than yourself on Earth, so you'd be flying up the ladder.
So but not everything accurate, but a lot of things are.
A lot of things are pretty good, so it's worth seeing, I think.
Sean Duke, the cool scientist at SeanDuke.com, and where else?
SeanDuke.com, yeah, that's the main thing, science spinning, so various stuff going up there, and you want to check out the various things I'm doing, have a look there on the blog.
Thanks for coming out, Sean.
Thank you.